Michael Vlahos has published widely in and been and has a long and deep background in security policy and foreign affairs. He has his PhD from the Fletcher School. He's been a project director at the Center for Naval Analysis. He's been a director of a center at the Foreign Service Institute of the State Department. He's been at the Defense Nuclear Agency, at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, at the CIA. He's been everywhere a person with his background ought to go. He's published in all of the best journals in both defense and foreign policy, and he's been on national television frequently, both in the United States and in Canada. For the past 5 years, he's been working intensely on a theme that is most apposite to this panel, to changes that he foresees in the foreign policy of the United States because of changes in our culture. He's now a senior fellow at the Progress and Freedom Foundation in Washington, Michael Vlahos.
Why does immigration bother us? Aren't we a nation of immigrants? I think the problem of immigration is embedded in a larger misconception that most of us share about America, a misconception that I think is implicit in the thematic title for our convocation here. Because America is really neither an idea nor people alone, but a tribe, or more properly, a band of tribes. David Hackett Fisher wrote an interesting book, which many of you may have read, called Albion's Seed. And he posited, I think fairly persuasively, that America grew from four original tribes. He gave them these rubrics: Puritan, Cavalier, Quaker, Backcountry. And he said that these tribes not only persist, but that they still have cultural hegemony in America. And in fact, that they created the American idea. He says, the American idea of freedom developed from indigenous folkways, which were deeply embedded in the inherited culture of the English-speaking world. Folkways. The American idea is rooted in a dominant group of folkways. This is extremely important, and I'll give you four or five things that have flowed from this. One is that these folkways became regional identities, and that they shared the same overarching ethos. That is to say, language, religion, concepts of the family, and ultimately a larger concept of liberty vested in a republic. However, number two, they had very different approaches flowing from their folkways toward liberty, toward the nature of conduct within the polity. Third, that this led to conflict, that in fact these folkways, these different groups, as they became regionally attached to various pieces of the American soil, were to themselves very different initially. They sensed that difference as much as they sensed their kinship. And this led inevitably to conflict culminating in the Civil War. But they also shared enough to create a shared single Republican system, and that these groups together achieved a hegemony culturally in America. There were no other tribes. They banded together, in effect, in times of challenge from other tribes, to keep their dominance. And in effect, they created a system where other tribes, other groups, whether they came as groups or as individuals, in order to become members of America, had to become essentially culturally members of this tribe, especially to advance. And that also these tribes over the course of two centuries, more than that because they were here before we were a nation, grew together. They were fused, in effect. And so they've not only kept their hegemony, only two of our presidents have been outside of these four tribes, but that folkways hegemony, in cultural terms, has equal stability and a kind of solidity of the civic idea of America. Now, there have been some crisis times. I mentioned the Civil War, and one of the interesting things about the pre-Civil War period, the period we call sectionalism, was that 7/8 of the immigrants coming to the U.S. at that time went to the North. In other words, immigration and that cultural influx heightened the sense of sectionalism. What happened, though, in the Civil War was that one of these folkways achieved dominance over, well, one or two achieved dominance over the other two. And you had a period of resolution worked out there through the process of this conflict and the way in which this conflict led ultimately to a reconciliation. The second crisis in the 1890s was a little different. Here you had a much larger influx of people from very different tribes coming to the United States who weren't easily assimilated. That was the perception at the time. It was a much larger percentage of the American population, and it was very unsettling. So the question was, would the dominance of these four tribes be maintained? In effect, it was maintained. In effect, as others have pointed out, like O'Sullivan, there were barriers put down at a certain point. And in fact, the barriers themselves were followed by an interesting period in American cultural life in which nativism renewed and recreated the sense of Americanness. This was what was so powerful about this great period of cultural efflorescence in the 1930s. Now today, it's interesting, you don't just simply have the new tribes coming in, new folkways, but that they're taking a regional identity that wasn't necessarily true in the 1890s, when the new tribes that were coming in were more fluid and more able to move within American society. You have also, which you didn't have in the 1890s, you have from within the elite in America a deconstructionist philosophy flowing from postmodernism, which essentially is dismantling the very essence of the idea of the dominance of these four tribes and their hegemony. And finally, this elite is a national elite that is networked nationally and is no longer rooted in the tribes that they were once a part of. And I ask the question, of course, how did we get to this point? Now I want to return to Rome. It's interesting that Tom Fleming spent so much time on Greece and Rome, because Greece and Rome have always been important metaphors, even models, to American leaders. The founders were extremely infused with the sense of what they were creating, going back, leaping back to the only model that they could see in the past, which was Rome. And Rome was a nation. The city-state was a nation. But we forget that the Latin word nazione means tribe, essentially. And Rome was a city-state not of one group, but of several groups, several tribes. And Rome went through its period of conflict between these tribes. But eventually it established a culture of its own, and that culture only began to lose itself as Rome became successful. The success of Rome as a warrior state, a warrior republic, was its undoing. And as Tom mentioned, it began to lose its sense of itself as it became an empire. The wholeness of Rome was lost, not when it incorporated the Latins, not even the Italians necessarily, because again, these were people who could invest themselves with the same language. That wasn't too difficult for Italians, certainly not for Latins. And they could invest themselves with the same culture as Rome. But when Rome went beyond its capacity to be itself and became an empire, it broke down. And the empire became a situation where you had a unitary Roman elite, it was unitary in cultural terms, presiding over many fractious nations. Now I return to the original question, how did we get to this point? American elites have always worried that we were in danger of going through the same process that Rome did. You can look at the Education of Henry Adams, where he writes about America in the 1890s as going through the same process of cultural and political disintegration that the Roman Republic did in the days of Marius and Sulla. We worried about the corruption of imperialism in the post-war era, and with good reason. We worried about it because that's what was happening. In effect, the period after World War II saw the creation of an American empire. And I've been wrestling with how we reach this point where America and the American idea as a cultural concept seemed to be so much under attack. The first of these issues that comes home to me is that America became an empire after World War II, an empire of good, No doubt about that. But that empire created, it necessitated, because it was a mobilization state, necessitated the creation of a national elite, a new elite. And I would argue that this elite was a fusion of the elites of the various folkways that Fisher describes. And that this elite, in effect, became comfortable with the notion that they were born to rule. And their capacity to rule the world became the basis for a same kind of approach domestically. I think you began to see this by the 1960s, and that the way in which the civil rights movement was perverted is the second aspect of what's happened in America. The problem of assimilating, embracing, elevating to equal the black community, black society, created an enormous problem for the elite. They didn't want to assimilate, even though blacks were willing and ready to assimilate into these four folkways as they still roughly existed in America. It was easier to create a situation, I would argue, where you could bring into the fold of this cultural elite a black elite, and at the same time maintain, under your larger rule, the nation as a nation of separate tribes. In effect, you began to see, starting in the 1960s, the developing concept that we saw in the Roman Empire, for example, of America transforming itself from a fused group of tribes culturally identified with those folkways, with a political system concept of civic virtue that flowed from that, into a very different kind of society, a society ruled by an elite that was culturally homogeneous, but redefining the rest of the population as a set of separate nations by law. And that, in effect, using black society and the difficulties of assimilating black society was the entering wedge for recreating America in this new image. And that, in effect, what you see when people talk about diversity is you see diversity of face, but unity of culture in the elite. When you look at the Clinton cabinet, the people who are not of the original four tribes, who are not of the four Anglo tribes, if you want to call them that, are culturally the same. They are assimilated into it, just like you could be a Syrian or an Egyptian in the third century. If you were rich enough and you learned Latin and you assimilated into that elite, you became part of the Roman elite. You had Philip the Arab was emperor of Rome in 235 and celebrated the 1,000th anniversary of Rome. But the people were kept, and especially what were once Roman people, were essentially stripped. And Tom described this nicely. By the time you reach the point where Caracalla in 1212 gave citizenship to all of the people of Rome, of the Roman Empire, it was no longer Rome. Rome ceased to exist long before it fell, long before it reached its pinnacle of power. It had died. It had died as an idea. And essentially what we see today is the creation of the concept of a multinational empire presided over by an elite that retains the folkways of those four original tribes, a perversion of the American idea. And I would argue that we're afraid of immigration because immigration is now seen by Americans as a way of encouraging and making final this process, because immigrants are painted by this national elite as essentially being new nations coming to America. No longer are they individuals whose proclamation of themselves as Americans make them Americans. No longer are they the kind of people who come here wanting to be American. And let me just give you the example of my father, who's Greek. He couldn't speak English until he was 5, even though he was born here, because he grew up in a hermetic little Greek world in Springfield, Ohio. First thing he did was to get, he was given as a gift the Count of Monte Cristo when he was 5 years old, and he proceeded to start reading it. And he read that book as a 5, 6-year-old. He taught himself English. He left the Greek Orthodox Church when he was 9 to become an Episcopalian. That was a remarkably courageous act, not only if you know my grandmother, but if you think about what those communities of immigrants were like in America. And they continually broke down. Immigrants wanted to become American, and wanted to become American not in the civic abstract sense, but in the cultural sense of the four folkways. Now, however, the national elite, and you can see them doing this on things like National Public Radio, provide an individual set of of graduated rewards and what I call a political group spoil system to encourage new immigrants to be persistent in their original nationality, their original culture. And you see them being asked to come up and talk about their culture and how wonderful that culture is. The entire concept of multiculturalism thus becomes a beautiful mechanism of control, where the control of this national elite is embedded. And those among the people who are able to rise into it are then accepted. They're the only ones who still go through the process of assimilation. It's a perverse system, and it's one that we have to stop. We are part of the elite, but whenever you have periods of reform in America, it is those elites who retain the most powerful vision of what America is that are able to actually make the reform happen. That's what we need to do, because even though we are in a minority among the national elite, the dominant national elite is focused on a very different vision, we have the people with us. And the Perot insurgency showed how much hatred of the elite exists in America and how much Americans, I think, below the surface, understand what's going on. They may not be able to articulate it very well, but they understand it. They understand the fact that they're being marginalized in politics. They understand how they're being stripped, like the Roman citizen who is progressively stripped of his capacity to have any role in the system. The stratification in America that goes along with this process in terms of class, culture, and wealth is also evident. The only way this can change is for a group from within the elite who are aware of this to come forward and to stop it. So my role here, if there is any, is to bring this to your attention. It's sort of an adjuration. I have no policy, except that the vision that must come from within us and from within a renewed Republican Party must be one that tells this story, because this is the story of America. Not an idea alone, nor people, but a tribe, that there is a set of specific cultural values that others want to be a part of, but that we have to be able to lead Americans to this, not just offer policies, but offer as well a vision that they can relate to. Thank you.